Thanks so much for listening to the English Florist podcast. I just wanted to say a huge thank you to everybody that has messaged me one way or another, thanking me for interviewing Lou. She is such an amazing woman and has so much, so much to say, sharp as a tack. And I have fed back all of your lovely, gorgeous messages. She's absolutely delighted. Funny note, though, she was desperately trying to listen to our conversation. Lou has an Alexa, which does all sorts of things in her house for her. And so I when I was sitting there recording the podcast, I showed her how she just has to ask Alexa to find the English Florist podcast. And when I first told her that it was out and ready to listen to, she was super excited. Unfortunately, Alexa could only find the English Florist podcast for Christmas. And she said, "Linds, I don't need to know about your Brussels sprouts. I want to listen to our conversation." But she has listened to it subsequently and is really, really delighted and would be so happy to come back on. So yes, there will be more from Louise McGregor. What a legend she is. Thanks so much. And I hope you really enjoy this episode too.
Welcome to the English Florist Podcast, a fortnightly show about living the life of an event florist. This week, Linz asks, what do seasonal flowers mean to you? And what about only buying locally? Is this the best way to buy, the only way you should buy, perhaps? It's an emotive subject for many, and Lindsay tries to unpick this sometimes thorny topic.
It is the end of January, the 30th of January, and I am just about to walk the dog. I'm just looking in my garden as I make my way to my van, and I'm just looking to see what's coming up in the driveway, in the gravel, in my big water trough that I've planted up. And there's a lot of greenery. Oh, and there's a little bit of colour. Oh yeah, I've got one muscari and five snowdrops and a really beautiful hellebore, pink hellebore. Hello, Maple. Seasonal flowers. What is seasonal flowers? What does it mean to you? And what does it mean to me as a florist? Well, seasonal flowers to me means the flowers that are growing in my garden, in my region at the moment. Not necessarily in my garden, because obviously I'm not really much of a gardener. I do have seasonal flowers growing in my garden, but not for cutting really. There's just a raised bed where I've got some tulips, and they are just poking through the soil now, although we've had that cold snap and they're looking a little bit in suspension. There are about 10 irises, which the greenery, the leaves are kind of just really up and thriving. So they're going to be the first thing in the raised bed that's out. But to me, seasonal means flowers that are actually in season and growing in my locality, which is quite a bit different to what I'm actually offering as a florist. And so this week's podcast is all about seasonality and where I buy my flowers from, and a bit of a hot potato. I've found of late I've had a lot of florists messaging me about conflict and their general sort of guilt and discomfort amongst other florists when they talk about the flowers and where they supply them from. So yeah, seasonal flowers, what does it mean to you? Come on then, mates, let's go for a walk. I've brought the dog back to Penwood for our morning walk. I'm pleased to say the weather is pretty mild. It's 5 degrees, which I believe at this time of year is an average. I've got my scarf, my gloves and my beanie on. I've got my welly boots on. But I'm pleased to say it's not freezing and it's not raining, which is wonderful. This week's podcast, I've been pondering how to tackle it. What was the best way to approach this discussion, which has It's a bit like an elephant in the room. And depending on who you are and where you stand on the interesting subject of seasonal flowers, whether you import your flowers, whether you only buy English flowers, it's a bit like, I don't know, 20 years ago, the whole organic debate, whether you bought organic vegetables, whether they were better, the non-organic vegetables. And I think time has passed and we're at a point now where if you buy organic vegetables, that's fine. There are some of us that don't think it necessarily tastes better. But maybe, you know, buying a vegetable that's not been sprayed with pesticides, maybe that is a preferable thing to do. I can see all the arguments for, but equally the cost of organic vegetables it can be prohibitive. And when I go to the supermarket, I tend to not buy organic, although I do get an organic veg box once a month. I don't think they necessarily taste any better than the vegetables that I buy from the supermarket, but I do like the element of seasonality. Although I have to say, I do get things like Italian onions in my box, so it's not all British, and yet I still buy it. My husband always wonders why I buy it. I'm not really sure is the truth of it. And I think, going back to flowers, I think we're kind of there on British flowers, importing flowers. What I'm finding is I'm receiving a lot of direct messages from some very confused florists, unsure where they stand on it, and troubled by some judgy fellow florists' comments, remarks on social media about buying imported flowers. Where do I stand on imported flowers? Well, I've always bought imported flowers. When I started floristry, there were English flowers, but they actually had a very, many florists that I worked with at the time took a very dim view. They didn't think they lasted very long. There wasn't much of selection, and it wasn't the sort of thing one put in one's bouquets. And so I didn't really, have a very high opinion of British flowers. Then about 14 years ago, I got involved with a body called Flowers from the Farm, and they were all over British flowers, a small group of florists and flower farmers. And I tootled down a couple of years in a row to Columpton and sat there as a florist, not a flower farmer, kind of inquiring and putting across a florist's perspective on buying British flowers. And around the same time as I was doing that and I was raising my own awareness of British flowers and what was available, I did have a couple of weddings, one in particular, where the couple wanted no imported flowers and everything had to be upcycled and recycled. So even the vases had to be recycled. Nothing was to be bought in, especially for their wedding. And it was difficult. It was really difficult. I discovered some online British flower growers, namely James down in Clarence in Cornwall. I realised I could buy tulips and, tulips I could buy. I now know they're from Joe Munson over at Smith & Munson in Lincolnshire. And James was obviously buying them in and putting them in his boxes. And he was also sourcing his narcissi from the Isles of Scilly. He was very limited. And I know you can buy Alstroemeria here in the UK. But you know what? It's not really seasonal Alstroemeria in the middle of where we are now. Well, at the end of January. So when we talk about British flowers and seasonal flowers, I think there's a big difference for me. And I think there is a big difference, British flowers and seasonal flowers. You can pretty much grow anything under a glass house, surely, here in the UK. It's not necessarily what would be growing at this time of year in the UK. So for me, I think it's easier that this podcast is from my perspective. And I'm really hoping that it will give some clarity two other florists who are finding this whole quagmire of a subject a bit tricky to navigate, particularly the younger florists who maybe came into floristry via growing their own flowers. Certainly, when I get home, I'm going to read some of those messages anonymously, I might add. I don't want to drag any names into this at all. This is just a conversation, a discussion, just to throw up a few issues, a few questions, and answer some things maybe, and give my perspective as a florist on where I stand. Seasonality. For me, seasonality is what's going on in my area here and now. And as a florist, it can mean a lot wider. I throw the net a lot wider. I need to have flowers for all occasions, for the arrangements that I'm arranging for. So if I'm doing a funeral arrangement, I don't want to be preaching to my clients about what they can and can't have. If I can't actually get something, imported or otherwise, then I am going to have to manage their expectations. But I don't think it's my place to tell a client, a customer, a potential customer, what they can and can't have. If they've just lost their wife and her favourite flower was a yellow rose, it is not my place to tell them, "Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Smith, you can't have that yellow rose. It's January, don't you know? And we don't grow roses in the UK in January." Because by and large, Mr. Smith will know that already. And all he wants to do is arrange flowers as the last gift to his beloved, dearly departed wife. And the last thing he wants to do is be told by some preachy florist that she doesn't import because it's bad for the environment. The fact of the matter is, there are lots of situations where we import. I was just listening on the radio yesterday and was listening to an artisan cocoa bean chocolate producer, a small chocolate producer in London. And she buys her cocoa beans in from Amsterdam. Well, obviously they're not grown in Amsterdam, but there's a huge hub of cocoa beans in Amsterdam. And I thought it was a really good analogy. You know, we'd be supporting a small artisanal chocolate maker, and no one would judge them at all about where her beans come from, because we don't grow beans in the UK, cocoa beans that is. We don't grow coffee beans. We don't grow tea here in the UK. And yet somehow it's okay for all of those things to be brewed and drunk and consumed. And yet we can't consume, as in enjoy, a bouquet of flowers grown in Kenya, because according to social media, there are only people wearing hazmat suits and spraying them within an inch of their life of terrible, terrible chemicals. And on the one hand, I do think, yes, there probably are chemicals, and there are chemicals sprayed on some flowers that might be undesirable. But I think, generally speaking, this is a huge generalisation. And I would take a lot of social media posts with a very large pinch of salt. And I think some of those individuals who are writing those articles are scaremongering. And I think shame on them, really, for being so ridiculous and alarmist with their posts, because they come across as very intelligent and well-written pieces. And when you actually pull them apart and look at them and hold them up to scrutiny, they have very little integrity, and they are recycling old pieces of information. And as I say, I'm sure to a certain extent, some of those articles had a degree of truth to them. It's how it's painted across a whole board. And I think it makes me very angry that these articles are read and disseminated by people who really don't understand the bigger picture. And on that point, and it's really hard to ascertain what the truth is unless we actually take ourselves on an aeroplane and go to these places and see them for ourselves, which of course most of us can't because we're not invited and we don't know what the truth is. We have to go to the companies and ask them for some degree of transparency. And certainly within my own imported flowers Dimensions, a company that I actually buy my flowers from in Holland, have invited lots of their florists to the communities that grow their flowers for them that we buy. And so in 2020, I was invited by Hook Flowers to go to fly to Nice, actually. Mabel, do you want me to throw that for you? There you go. And I was invited to meet some of the ranunculus growers and the anemone growers, the tulip growers that supply me and my fellow colleagues here in the UK and indeed across the world. I also had the privilege of speaking to one of the Hoek team about the flowers that they buy further afield in Colombia and Ecuador. And whilst I'm not being able to confirm or deny whether things are treated with chemicals, because frankly, they probably do. This is a mass commodity which they can't risk being utterly blighted by a bug or something. I think that's the reality here. If you're investing millions of dollars or euros or whatever into growing a crop, a bit like here in the UK, I don't buy all organic. A lot of the food that I'm buying has probably been sprayed so that they maximise their return on their crop that they're growing. And it's exactly the same with flowers. So, back to the beginning. I buy imported flowers. I also buy, and I'm a massive supporter and have been for well over a decade, of locally grown flowers. Why do I buy them? Well, let me tell you in a minute. I'm going to get told off in a minute by Neil if I carry on, because I'm puffing as I pick up the speed and walk the dog. I'm back in my kitchen now. I've got a cup of coffee in my hand, and I decided just to pencil a couple of subject areas that I wanted to cover and explain as a florist my perspective on British flowers and imported flowers. And I have to say, first and foremost, I use both, and I'm a huge fan of both, and I don't have a problem using both. It is what it is. I've been a florist for a very long time, as everybody knows, and you know, when I first started out as a florist, British flowers had a terrible reputation. You know, florists that I would speak to would say, oh, they don't last. Oh, no, you only need to buy, you know, you have to get them from the Dutchman. Well, I know that not to be true. I can quash that ridiculous notion, because actually British flowers, very often in my experience, are cut to order, cut within 24 hours usually, and are in my arrangements within that window frame, maybe 48 hours. And so there's a real joy in supporting local businesses like myself. There's a real lovely, joyful relationship with local growers. Very often I've met them and we have, I don't know, they've come and done a workshop with me, and I've shown them how to make a decent bridal bouquet. You know, lots of people can tie hand-tied bouquets for gift bouquets, wrap them in brown paper and sell them, but not everyone can make a really decent bridal bouquet. And so as a florist, I think it's my, I'm delighted to share my skill set with those flower growers. I hope I inspire them as much as they inspire me. I think that's really, really important, that there shouldn't be a them and us about choosing British flowers over imported flowers. It's just, it's not a them or us situation. So that's the first point I wanted to make. Secondly, I do have a great relationship with my local growers. They are magnificent, and wherever possible, I will always contact them first, so that I can build an order. So for me, when I choose flowers, I'm often seeing what's available locally that can add to my imported flower order. Generally speaking, factors that will prohibit me buying locally are things like cost. Yes, English flowers are more expensive than imported flowers, and that's understandable, because if you're growing for a mass market, you know, pile them high, sell them cheap comes to mind as a phrase. I'm not suggesting that that's a lesser product, but if they are growing lots more in a much
bigger setup, then they can bring the cost of those flowers down. Locally grown flowers are much more labour intensive. It's a much smaller, more kind of refined plot very often. And so therefore those flowers have been calculated. Although I do know that a lot of British flowers that growers that I know do actually like to know what I'm paying in for the Dutchman, so they can almost benchmark their prices with the Dutchman. That's fine, that's absolutely fine, but ultimately cost has a really big factor in whether I choose British or Dutch. Huge, huge. Availability. Well, of course, I am a florist from January to December, and babies get born and people die every day of the year. And seasonal flowers in the UK at this time of the year, as I'm making this podcast, it's the end of January. There's very, very little growing. And when I say seasonality, for me, when I buy British flowers, I want to buy flowers that are coming up. So, for example, right now, the Isles of Scilly are producing the most beautiful narcissi. And I would possibly, if they were part of my colour brief or flower brief, then yes, I would probably buy those. However, I could probably buy tulips from local growers, and they have mail order facilities. Again, sometimes I'm prohibited by the number that I need versus the cost of having them sent to me. So I can think of one local grower which I'd love to support more often, but to get free delivery, I have to buy 100 tulips. And sometimes I don't need 100 tulips. Perhaps I just need one wrap of 50. So the size of my business does impact where I buy my flowers from. And also when I'm importing from Holland, I have a minimum spend. And so I need to spend up to that minimum spend. And if I still can buy locally, then I will do. But very often I have to put all my eggs in one basket to make it economically viable for me. Choice, again, goes hand in hand really with availability and seasonality. Choice is very important to an event florist. There's a lot of competition. All florists are obviously competing to win business. That's a natural thing. And therefore, I want my flowers to stand out so that I win business. It's as simple as that. And so with the use of trends and Pinterest, you know, very often customers are wanting particular roses, and they know full well that they're not in season here in the UK, but that doesn't make any difference to them. Their expectation is this, and if I want to win the business and I want to remain in business throughout the year, then I have no choice but to buy those flowers. Of course, I know there are florists that refuse to buy anything that is imported, but that severely restricts their choices of flowers. And I would argue it severely restricts their ability to win business on a mass scale. And I'm just thinking of January, what's available now? Well, if I think about it, I know I can probably get tulips. We've already discussed those. I can get narcissi. Again, there's a limited number because they're coming up, but they're not fully in season. I know we talk about snowdrops are in season and hellebores are in season, but snowdrops, who puts snowdrops in a bouquet? If somebody wants a big happy birthday bouquet, no one's going to give snowdrops. I would probably think about having snowdrops maybe in a small dainty bridal posy. But even that, that's my personal preference. It's probably not what my bride is going to want. And so what's actually here in the UK is very, very limited at the moment. And I don't put things like Alstroemeria, which is grown year round under glasshouses, in seasonality. Alstroemeria isn't a flower that I particularly like. I kind of associate it with the sorts of things like, I don't know, those year round, all year round chrysanthemums, which I wouldn't use in my flowers either. From the supermarkets, it's just my customers often say, no chrysanths, no carnations, no Alstroemeria. And so as lovely as it might be, it may well be British. My customer base would not want me to use that and rely on that for such, you know, so many months of the year. And so I have to look further afield. I have to provide arrangements which are going to inspire my customers, or else I may as well just pack up and not be a florist and do something else. So I think it's horses for courses, really. The other thing I put on my list here is customer preference. And that goes hand in hand with the next point that I made, which is education. So my customers will come very often with a preference. And in our consultation and discussion, I will try and explain to them how I work as a florist. And my preferences are to work as seasonally as possible. So at this time of year, I'm likely to be wanting to use ranunculus and tulips and anemones. And I know that they're all sourced in northern Italy and south of France and here in the UK. And so Valentine's Day is a classic example. I don't think I've sold a rose, or certainly a red rose, for many, many years. I have sourced other colour roses, but I find personally, the expense of a single red rose, the way they are produced in such volume and left waiting for one day to be sold on one day, I don't think the quality is always there. There are good quality roses, but they're very, very expensive. And my experience, a lot of the time, red roses go hand in hand with a meal deal, with a bottle of champagne or a bottle of chocolates or some sexy lingerie. And therefore, people won't necessarily want to put all of their eggs in one basket and buy one big luxury bouquet of roses. If I have customers booking me for Valentine's Day, I go out of my way to tell them that I'm not going to sell them red roses and that I would recommend, if they wanted something red, that they maybe have red anemones or they have red tulips or they have something else. Perhaps their partner has a favourite colour. Maybe they should think about buying them a lovely spring-inspired bouquet in their favourite colour, be that orange or yellow or white or whatever. And so I try and kind of sway my customers to think more within a wider parameter of what is seasonal and what isn't. I wouldn't be selling tulips in the middle of July or August. I will be suggesting something else. And also, I will be telling my customers what would be available in my local fields. And will they give their blessing to me being more creative with what is around so that I can try and create a really beautiful, seasonally, locally grown arrangement for them. So going back to where we are on guilting and shaming, I don't feel guilted. I'm not personally shamed by anyone. I don't think anyone would dare say anything to me because I feel really passionate about locally grown flowers, but I'm equally utterly delighted with what is I buy in from Holland. I'm really, really happy with the choice. My only issue is it's the cost of everything. I find that actually the cost of flowers generally across the board, be they British grown or be they imported flowers, are eye-wateringly expensive at the moment. But that's another story. Let's get back to locally grown versus importing flowers as a florist. I am in my office. It's Monday evening, and I just wanted to just emphasise the point about provenance of our flowers. And I'm just going to do a little analogy here. I've just opened up my email from Riverford, the veg box people, and I'm just having a little scroll through, and it's telling me all the goodies that are becoming up and coming in my boxes in the coming month. I'm just going to click on what's on the menu. I just actually want to see what's in my veg box, because I was rather taken aback, and I think this is just a classic point. I try to eat seasonally in the same way as I try and buy flowers seasonally. And on my small seasonal organic veg box, there are 8 things in there. On this particular veg box, 9 of them come from the UK. Brilliant. But one of them comes from Spain. If I order a family box, for example, I was quite interested to see that only 2 things out of the 10 items come from the UK, and 6 of them come from Spain, 2 of them come from Italy, and 1 of them comes from the Netherlands. And I'm just thinking, why is it okay for us to do something like this, to buy seasonal vegetables? It's clearly there's a supply and demand issue here, that they want to have the variety for their customer base. Not everyone wants to eat the same thing. They've obviously got lots and lots of selection here. There are 11 box choices here without fruit and veg, without the fruit in. Oh, there's actually more. There's 15 altogether, I think. But my point is that they need variety to offer their customers. And as a florist, I need variety too to offer my customers. And a classic case in point would have been this morning when I had a conversation with a customer about funeral flowers for next week. And when I suggested to her that I might just see what my local growers, or if I were just to buy a box from a UK grower, she didn't want it. And when I showed her some pictures of some flowers that I have done in February and January before, the pictures she particularly liked were the ones that had, guess what? They had roses in. They had anemones, but long stem anemones. I can't use the ones that I can get here in the UK because they were the wrong colours. They were too bright and too intense. I needed something more subtle. And my point is, I can't get exactly what my customers need. And it's not my place to tell and dictate to my customers. Yes, there are going to be a small niche number of people who will want to have only British things, regardless of the limit on the choice and the selection. But for the most part, most people will have an expectation, and it's not for me to tell them what they can and can't have, especially when, just like here in the veg box situation, there is choice. I feel like it's a bit like this kind of really closed up world, and we can't have it because it's not British. We can have it. We've been having it for 60 odd years. We can't just turn off the light. It's a bit like Brexit. Draw up the drawbridge and say, no, we're just going to eat all our own vegetables, grow our own flowers, drink our own wine. I mean, wake up and smell the coffee. Oh, sorry, we don't sell coffee. We can't have coffee. We'll have to have, I don't know, can't have tea either. Or well, I suppose we can have a bit of Cornish tea. But guess what? There won't be enough to feed the millions of people that drink tea every day. Oh, I'm rattling on here. But you get my point, don't you? We can't do it. And most of us don't want to do it. And so please stop nagging and blathering on about it. Get over yourself and move on. If you want to sell just British flowers, knock yourself out. But I know that my local growers are perfectly happy to say to me, we're really sorry, Linz, we're sold out. You're going to have to go to your Dutch supplier. They do that all of the time. And you know what? It's absolutely fine. I totally get it. Fair play to them. They've already sold out. Right, I'm going to go and have a drink of wine now. Speak to you later.
And would that be English or French, perhaps? Maybe Spanish? South African? I'm rather partial to a Californian Santa Maria Valley Pinot Noir. If you'd like to give some feedback or send a question into the show, Linz would love to hear from you. And the mailbag is where we're headed next.
I've got a question for the mailbag this week, and this question comes from Emily, and she writes, love listening to your podcast and how you blend your working as a florist with your life. You have mentioned you're not a gardener, and I'm interested to know how this can be so. Well, this is a really great question, Emily, and I think one of my very many shortcomings is that I'm impatient, and I've thought this for a long time. You know, why is it that I love flowers so much, but I don't really have a particular vested interest in gardening? I do have a garden, and I love it. And when we bought this house 20 years ago, it belonged to quite an enthusiastic gardener. So it has lots of lovely shrubs. It wouldn't have been the garden that I would have chosen to have, but I have worked with pretty much everything that the previous owner had in her garden. And I've added quite a lot too. And the things that I've added enable me to pillage my garden so that when I'm creating a bridal bouquet, for example, I can come into the garden and I can pick little bits of this and that. So things like jasmine and honeysuckle. I've got lots of forget-me-nots, which ordinarily gardeners might pull up, but actually I love the forget-me-nots in my garden, and I let them set seed and they come up all over the show, much to a lot of people's chagrin. They just think that, you know, that just they are a weed, but I love them, and I love them so I can pick them at the very end of their flowering season. So there are some blue flowers and there are some seeds, and I love the fact that in my garden I can put in, I almost capture the moment from my garden and put that into my bridal bouquets. But I haven't answered your question, have I? Why don't I garden? I am impatient and I have a really bad back. And for very, very many years, whenever I have attempted to go into the garden and do battle and, you know, dig up all the bindweed and goodness knows what else, ground elder in my garden, I have always suffered so, so badly. And most recently, I planted some tulips in, I've got a little raised bed out the front of the house, and I planted about a couple of hundred tulips, and I literally couldn't move, and I've been in
pain ever since. So I think the truth of it is I'm impatient, and the joy of flowers is arranging the flowers in the moment. I can get them in. It's just a couple of days to get them absolutely really open and on point as an event florist. So I have that kind of moment where most people who get given a bouquet have their flowers and they're just sort of still in bud, and they sit them on the table and they enjoy them bloom. Well, as an event florist, we want our flowers in bloom so that they're looking at their absolute peak when we put them in our bouquets for our weddings and events. And so I get that fix right there and repeat times, I don't know, 70 weddings a year or something. And there you have your answer. I love that moment. And I'm quite fickle as well. And so from 1 week to the next, I can go from a white wedding to a really colourful wedding. And I think in the last decade or so, with the ever-growing presence of local flowers and buying locally grown flowers from flower farmers around and about me, I almost get that sort of fix that one might have if they were growing in their own garden and then picking for pleasure. I get that sort of en masse, as in my buckets and buckets of flowers from the local growers. So what I have done more recently since lockdown is I've enjoyed gardening for vegetables, because I'm a really enthusiastic cook. I love foraging. I'm the queen of the wild garlic and wild garlic pesto and quiches and soups and things. And so I love foraging. In lockdown, I grew some vegetables and realised how much I enjoyed the fruits of my labours, as it were, and then pickling and preserving all the glut. I do have some raised beds out the front, and in the spring I grow tulips. So far, they have not coincided whatsoever with any of my weddings. Certainly, I haven't chosen colours for clients. I sort of separate that out, and if they happen to be growing and coincide with the right colour scheme, then that's flipping fantastic. But otherwise, I grow them for my own pleasure. So last year they all bloomed just as I went away in my camper van, and so a fellow florist down the road, I just said, come and help yourself, because it seems such a waste that they're just blooming and no one's enjoying them. Yeah, not much of a gardener. I have just these raised beds out the front just to cultivate some tomatoes and courgettes, and this year some runner beans. I do grow sweet peas. Last year I went a bit crazy in my raised bed and filled one of the whole of the raised bed with sweet peas, and I just couldn't keep up with them. Once again, I think I only used them for about three events, and the stems weren't as good as my local flower farmers, I've got to say. For whatever reason, I don't overwinter mine. I think that might have been a reason. I dabble. Let's put it that way. I dabble, but I really don't know my onions at all. I'm not a horticulturist. I know what I like. I have an eye for colour. So if you ask me varieties of things, yes, I have a fairly good sort of knowledge of flowers, but I'm not a boffin in any shape or form. And so when I choose flowers, I choose for shape and form and texture and seasonality. That's my question answered, I hope, Emily. Thank you so much. And if you do have a question, please just ping me a direct message and I will read it out here on the podcast. Another thing I'd like to talk about this week is I think I'm going to have a favourite flower on each of my podcasts. And I think as it's February, I think it's very timely that I should choose the snowdrop. And I really do genuinely love snowdrops. I love the fact that as I drive around the Berkshire lanes, they just kind of peek out from the hedgerows and from the banks in front of people's gardens. And it's almost like nobody deliberately planted them there. They just happen to be there. And they're quite fleeting. They're only here for a couple of weeks. And then there are places down the road from me, like Welford Park, which just have literally millions of the little beauties. And when you see them in a woodland and they are literally carpeting half an acre of ground, and the smell, who knew that they smell so beautiful? They're just utterly, utterly joyful. I believe they have a meaning because they're one of the first flowers of spring. They symbolise new beginnings. They symbolise hope and rebirth and the ability to overcome challenges, according according to Wikipedia, that is. Who knew? But I do love them. And I posted a little picture of something that I use almost to symbolise the snowdrops. And it's a flower called the Leucojum, otherwise known colloquially as the snowflake. And I often buy these from Cornwall. And during February and March, they are in season down in Cornwall because the climate's much, much warmer. And so I can buy literally about 50 or 100 of them. And they look exquisite en masse. And they kind of give the nod to the snowdrop. So snowdrops are very short and dainty and delicate. And I just feel like we should leave them growing in their little clumps in the garden and in the woodland. But in order to kind of capture the essence of something like a snowdrop at this time of year, I very often use leucojums, Cornish leucojums, and they just give that little dainty white nod. Little fleshy stems. I've got lots of pots a couple of years ago and planted them in my garden. And here in West Berkshire, they sort of come up. I can see them now. They're pushing through the ground. So they'll be up probably in March and flowering. And I think they flower all the way through to May, depending where you are in the UK. But I absolutely love leucojums. So yeah, so it's actually not just one. You get one. The snowdrop would be my kind of flower of February. But as I say, as a florist, I like to kind of give a nod to that beautiful snowdrop and include lovely leucojums or snowflakes in my bouquets. So that's me done for this week. I really hope you've enjoyed listening to the podcast. I really hope that if you're a florist listening and are really struggling with the whole whether I use British flowers or imported flowers, just know that it's fine. It's absolutely fine for you to do what you have to do to run your business, and no one should be judging you for it. And there are hundreds and thousands of florists up and down the country. We simply wouldn't be in business without our imported flowers. And so amen to them, and love and peace to all of our gorgeous British flower growers, because we love you too. Keep on keeping on, and we will lovingly support you throughout your growing season. Have a great week, and speak to you in a couple of weeks' time.
Join Lindsay Kitchen every 2 weeks for the English Florist Podcast. If you're thinking of starting a business, and also for established florists who'd like to go behind the scenes, you can become a supporter of this podcast and enjoy extra snippings, where Linz reveals more about the business side of being a professional event florist. Today's Extra Snippings is available now, and in it, Lindsay talks about expectations and asks what yours may be in the context of your floristry business or hopes to start one. Business plans, objectives, goals, both short and long term, and the journey. If you'd like to hear the exclusive Extra Snippings show, go to the White Horse Flower Company at whfco.co.uk and click on to the Patreon link, or click on the link in your podcast player app here. Be sure to subscribe to hear all updated episodes, and follow Lindsay on Instagram at the White Horse Flower.